Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
Hello, you are very welcome to this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I'm Aisling O'Rourke and I hope you are safe and well as you tune in this week. Once again, we have a cracking lineup on this week's show. I want to take a moment to say thank you to everyone who sent me lovely messages about our episode last week on Mother Earth Day, where we talked about, you know, why breastfeeding is more environmentally friendly. And I suppose we're putting it in a context that we don't necessarily think about it. And I'm mentioning that because the first item on our show tonight is something that we don't always, or even I would argue, we would rarely make the connection between the environment and the topic we're about to discuss. We're joined by Rebecca Duran-Stewart, and Rebecca is the director of UX and Y Limited. Rebecca, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So Rebecca, first things first, your area is UX. So for the uninitiated, what exactly is UX?
Yes. So UX is an acronym for user experience. And what that means is the user experience is how we make our users or our customers that visit our websites or our apps, how we make them feel during that experience when they decide to browse or purchase our products and services.
And when listeners hear that, you know, I think like at the end of the day, whether it's the app we use for a club card or value card, points for the groceries, a dating app, social media apps, all of us now, we have some connection. It might even be the banking app, but we've at some point we've come across apps and websites where we know what they are, even if we don't use them in our daily lives ourselves. We don't necessarily make that connection between those things there on the internet, out there on the cloud, as we always refer to it as, and the environment. And listeners will be, you know, forgiven for wondering why I have you on the show, on an environmental show, and not with Ronan Berry on the business show on Tuesday nights here on the station. So explain it to me, Rebecca. Like, so you've said there that UX, user experience, is about, you know, how we interact with businesses in the online space, you know. Like if people go to my website, thecommunicationscoach.ie, do my images open quickly, you know, or is there a loading delay? But what's that got to do with the environment?
Yes, so great question. And yes, I absolutely agree. It doesn't seem like an obvious connection. However, what we understand about, you know, sustainability and the environment at the moment is, you know, what's really on our front door, you know, like maybe our recycling bins and, you know, how we can consume and purchase better choices. But this also applies online because we purchase online just as much as we do in person. So the connection between the two is really about how sustainability can be conveyed online in these digital experiences, right? Either on websites or on apps. Because if we think about it, the traditional model of building a website or maintaining a website is, you know, we purchase our hosting provider and we recruit our web designer and we put everything together and we just leave it be and we let our customers shop and do what they wish.
Midway through that, we go, and that's going to cost me how much to do?
Correct. Exactly. We've always just thought really about price. What's this, all this going to cost me? But we haven't really thought about the cost to the environment. And actually, there is one, right? There is actually some great tools out there, very simple ones like websitecarbon.com, free as well, where you can actually type in your website URL, so your homepage, for example, and it will tell you actually the carbon usage of your website and also how you can improve it. And what that means is that it's essentially telling you that your website is carrying a particular load when it comes to carbon and environmental impact. And that can be a range of things on your website or your app.
And like, why does that matter? Like I mentioned there about the cloud, like in my day-to-day work, I use the likes of Microsoft OneDrive and Google Workspace. I dread to think about the amount of data that I've stored in the cloud, you know, and for listeners, I'm doing the inverted commas there on my fingers. But, you know, what is the cloud even, you know, like, I know last week on the show and last week, the minister for the environment, the leader of the Green Party, Eamon Ryan, was talking about the fact that really Dublin has hit its climate limit in terms of data centres, because, and I know this is something that you care about, Rebecca, like, all of that data, whether it's personal or professional use, it's taking up space. It's having a carbon impact, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And that's only one of many factors that our websites and our apps are contributing to the environment in a negative fashion. We have, as you mentioned, Aisling, as well, images and videos and carousels that we have on our website and apps. They carry a huge amount of energy and loading that actually does affect the environment. And if you think about also from a supply chain point of view, the different partners and suppliers that we use to build our websites and apps and maintain them and replenish them, all of that is, you know, like it's spoken about in any supply chain, all of those partners carry a weight to the environmental impact. And it's about making sure that we're reducing that impact, but also communicating that impact online, because our users, you know, our customers care about the sustainability efforts that we're making, and they want to make their own choices of what brands they interact with.
I am just looking at the carbon website, carbon.com, and I've put in midlands103.com for curiosity's purposes purely, okay? And according to this website, according to this rating, midlands103.com's website is 74% dirtier of all web pages globally. We're getting I think it's like an E-, if I'm reading the ratings correctly, Rebecca. But, you know, yes, for those of us that, like, you know, don't understand this, and this website's fascinating, you know, like, for instance, every time there's 114.4 kilograms of CO2 created by just this one website, and that creates as much CO2 as boiling water for 15,453 cups of tea. Now, I can't even imagine that. So can you explain to me why the carbon footprint of a website is important?
Yes. So the carbon footprint of a website, as I said, the way that a website can produce its experience to a customer is through that supply chain being part of all those features and designs that it includes. So what we want to try and do is make sure that just when we're maybe making those changes or those optimizations next time to our website and app, maybe take into consideration, you know, what do I absolutely need on the website when it comes to delivering my message and delivering my products and my services? Maybe really think about what the user needs and what your business needs rather than throwing the kitchen sink at it, right? There's some quick wins as well that we can start testing, and there's some bigger players as well that we can take some inspiration from. But I would just encourage you to start maybe taking some small steps just in understanding, for example, websitecarbon.com, understanding the impact of your business online. And users really want to interact with brands that are being more sustainable, full stop. And our website is a great way to not only communicate that, but actually do it as well.
And like, what might that look like, you know, because like, even if we just use the radio station's website as an example for this, and if I, you know, pretend that I don't, you know, have a show on Midlands 103 for a moment, and I go on to Midlands 103, it's a radio station, so I expect to be able to listen to the radio station and listen back to shows that I missed. I expect to be able to get news from the region, to see pictures, to even watch videos. Like, I now in 2024, as a consumer, when I go onto a website, I expect it to have, like, you know, all the bangs and whistles. So if I want to be a carbon friendly website, does that change what it might look like? Or do I have to, as a consumer, lower my expectations? Like, do we have to go backwards? And I think, because I think it's something that I think people will struggle to visualize what a carbon friendly website might look like in comparison to well, how the website currently looks.
Yes, yes. So it absolutely doesn't have to change your business entirely. That's not something that we need to do by any means. But I would keep in mind two things. The first one I would say is, you know, the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive by the EU. That is a requirement now since January of last year to make sure that not only corporates, but some SMEs, and that will be extended as the years go by, are actually required to communicate their sustainability efforts and their environmentally friendly efforts online for their business, right? And as this develops, users' expectations are growing with that, mm-hmm. right? So that's one thing that, first of all, we just have to start addressing. And then on the other hand, as I said, we do have to address it, but we don't need to change our business entirely. And we don't want to, you know, it certainly doesn't have to have a detrimental impact on your customer base. You can make very, very small changes that start communicating your sustainability efforts. You could have, for example, in About Us pages or in your story pages, you could simply start talking about some of the sustainability efforts that your business is making. And that could be addressing your supply chain, bringing in new partners that are more sustainable, but you're delivering the same service just in a more sustainable way, right? That could be one area. And then that's very much, I suppose, from a business branding point of view. But then from a customer point of view, if you're selling products and services, you could simply start to highlight which products and services are maybe more environmentally friendly. And we see this a lot at the moment with retailers, for example, who might display that a pair of shoes, for example, is a more sustainable product than, you know, this other pair of shoes, right? And they might do that through little leafy icons, for example, mm-hmm. right? And there's lots of different ways that very, very simple, even subtle messaging can be implemented without affecting your entire change of a business. That's absolutely not necessary, but it has a massive impact in how users are making choices online.
Do we have to look at the amount of data that we're putting on our websites, like audio and visuals? Is that also important?
Yes, absolutely. Because when it comes to data from a, for example, videos, carousels, images point of view, that has always had a loading and speed concern for businesses online. However, now it's actually when you have more and more of them, you're actually, as everybody knows, when you're patiently waiting for something to load, that is all energy consuming for the environment. So again, pairing back and really thinking, well, what does the user need to make that purchasing decision or explore those different products and services? What do they need? And frame your design based on that.
For companies, for people who have an online presence, which is the most, like most people, we have some level of online presence. Like, where do we start finding out about this, Rebecca? Because like, if you're not a tech nerd, you know, this can be overwhelming. So any pointers for us to start educating ourselves on this?
Yes, definitely. So first and foremost, I would definitely visit the EU directive page just to read up very, you know, just they have executive summaries, which are very short and just give you a little bit of a flavor of the reporting directives that are coming in, well, are coming in, but are evolving. So it's very much worthwhile keeping up to date with that, making sure that your business is, you know, if it's already involved, then that you have to start thinking about it. But if it's coming down the line, maybe start making a plan around it. And then I would also, what I find really interesting is actually the different case studies that have been published across the media in the last year. And they are generally labeled with the greenwashing term.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if everybody is familiar with that, but greenwashing is essentially businesses that are claiming to be sustainable to a particular degree, but actually they're not. And then they are reported as greenwashing, which essentially means that they have not complied with what their claims to be are.
Yeah, in essence, it's false advertising or fraud.
Correct.
You know, if you want to call a spade, it's fraud. It's claiming that that jumper that I bought in that shop that had that made from recycled material label on it actually wasn't. Well, that's fraud, you know. So
yes,
and people are afraid of being accused of that, of course.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm not directing everybody to look at those case studies to be scared by any means, but it's just an example of the reality that we're really living in, that, you know, these brands are making an effort to be sustainable. They are not doing what they're claiming to be. And we can learn a lot from that, right? So mm-hmm. we can, it's not to be scared, but just to learn, what are they doing? What are they doing wrong? And, you know, for us then to keep an eye on those things. And those case studies are publicly available online. Unfortunately, they did get a lot of coverage, of course, but that's something that I would definitely look into. And if, you know, we're also in our business of UX and Y, we're also actually going to be attending and speaking at the Sustainability Summit in the RDS at the end of May. And that's going to be an incredible space and event because it's all going to be about sustainability. Lots of different businesses from different markets and from different industries are going to be attending and speaking about their sustainability story. And we want to help them and you to tell that online and help you figure out how to encourage your users to engage with you. Because let's be frank, as this sustainability topic evolves, it's actually becoming a competitive advantage for mm-hmm. a lot of businesses. And that's also a really great thing to jump on now, because that's not always long lasting.
Yeah.
So let's keep an eye on that. And if I can be of any help, of course, reach out.
Well, Rebecca Duran Stewart of UX and Y, thank you so much for joining us on a fascinating topic on this week's episode of Let's Go Green. We'll be back after the break.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Well, a little bit earlier on this week's episode, we were talking about the design of our online presence and how it can impact the environment. Well, now we're staying with things designer, but in a more tangible sense. And now that we really are into spring and we're hoping with crossed fingers that we get some nice warm weather this summer, it's time to take a look at our wardrobes and how we can be more sustainable and environmentally friendly when it comes to dressing ourselves. To discuss this with us further, we're joined by Aoife Dunican, also known as The Style Bob. Aoife, you are very welcome to Let's Go Green.
Evening, Aisling. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Aoife, a few weeks back, I tackled my wardrobe. It was a job that, like, I try to do like a spring clean every year when it comes to the wardrobe. And you know, I try to, you know, be sustainable in my shopping. But yet every year I seem to collect items that I don't love or I don't wear or they don't last the way they should. And it seems it can be really one of those jobs that we all know we should do, but we tend to put off because it's not really, for me at least, it's not the most enjoyable of tasks. So I know you are very much of the philosophy of buy well and buy once, and I try to do that. But before we get into, you know, being more sustainable in our approaches, it's not as easy anymore, I find, and maybe you'll disagree with me, but to find quality clothes seems to be a bit harder. They're either extremely expensive or you think because it's a certain brand name that they will be really good quality, but then you're disappointed. So first things first, if I'm going to try and buy once and buy well, do you have any tips for me?
So you hit the nail on the head, Aisling, but we either have to buy ridiculously expensive, which, you know, if you think about the cost of living right now, isn't the most feasible thing to do. Or then we end up somewhere in the high street and we're buying it might fall apart in the space of a week. So what's happened, I suppose, in the last 20 years is that kind of the price of clothes in one way have gotten cheaper in one way. I'm thinking back to my Tommy Texas days of buying an outfit for £12 back in the 80s, where I can go on to Shein now and probably buy four outfits for €12. So clothes have always been expensive. It's just that the problem now is that they're expensive, but the quality isn't there. So how I approach this is, first of all, is that, you know, we are being faced with consumption all the time, right? I think the world has produced 80 billion, we consume 80 billion clothes every year. That's 400% bigger than what we consumed 20 years ago. So we are consuming vast amounts of clothes, vast amounts of cheap clothes. This is 24/7 shopping in our face all the time. So what I try to do, first of all, is before I go shopping at all, is you mentioned that task that we all hate, and that is to face the wardrobe.
Yeah.
Right. Because I was going to something a few weeks ago. So I was presenting to 200 people a few weeks ago, a bit daunting. And I saw the venue and I said, oh my God, I have nothing to wear. Can you imagine that I said that? And I immediately saw myself going on to this online site. So I caught myself, you know, the addiction was getting in. I caught myself and I went home and there was 10 possible tops in the wardrobe that I could have worn. But it would have been very easy for me there and then to go straight, add to bag. 24 hours later, it's there. So you've got to look at your wardrobe a very different way before you even start to go shopping. So the biggest tip I give before you open those doors, and it is a daunting task, is to write down what your lifestyle is going to look like for the next 6 months, right?
Okay. So
I, for example, know that I am back doing face-to-face presentations. I'm also doing webinars. So I have a section where it's my 4 webinar tops. They're all red. That fulfills that part of my lifestyle. When it comes to face-to-face talks, I have a certain part of the wardrobe that's for that. When I go to see new clients, I never wear bright colours going to see new clients because it's not about me, it's about them. So I have a certain wardrobe like that. Also, I feel very comfortable when I'm out shopping with clients, when I'm in clients' houses, I could be down on all fours, under beds, I could be doing anything, right? So I have to think of comfort and also being warm. I know that sounds a bit ridiculous, but we all can't afford to have our heat on in the houses. So I'm here even, you know, in the height of spring in my woolies. So I have to, I look at the lifestyle. Then I open the wardrobe and I go, right, I've got my lifestyle wheel into 4 sections. So I look through it and I go, do you know what? I actually have loads there in the going out section, right? I've loads. Or I have a lot there for talks, but, you know, I'm actually low there on maybe new clients. Or if you take it back to somebody else's, they say, oh, I'm not in the office 5 days a week anymore. I'm 2. So this back to work wardrobe, it might be scary, or this casual, you know, work wardrobe now. But in fact, break it down. I only need it for 2 days a week. The rest of the time I could be sitting in front of a computer. So I might need to just have the leggings at the bottom and the Zoom tops for the rest. So it's less daunting when you have that lifestyle wheel before you open it. Then when you do open the wardrobe, you're sitting there and you know what to almost look for. And a great way of detoxing and cleansing is I do a system called the Q system. And the Q system was thought to be by my Mr. Bob, which I call him, where I came home one night and he had a shirt in the bin, which you can understand I was not very happy about. And I said, why have you got this shirt in the bin? He said, well, you know what? I went through my 10 casual shirts for work. And he said, that's my 10th favorite. And are you ever going to pick 10th in the menu? And I said, actually, no.
It's a good point.
It's a good point. So I went back to my, you know, I took a section. Let's say my jeans and nice top section, or your nice top section. And I had bought 2 tops pre-pandemic. And I'd never worn them since. So the pandemic happened, you could say, okay, we've nowhere to go for 2 years. But the pandemic, we won't say it's over, but, you know, we're out again. And I looked at those 2 tops and I put them in the queue. And I said, unless the other 14 tops are in the wash, that's never going to be worn. So it was easy for me to actually bring them to charity store and say goodbye. The other wonderful thing about the queue system is that when you start putting things into a queue again, you start with number 1 being your favorite, the stuff that was at the back of your wardrobe actually comes back up to the top of the queue again. You just haven't seen it for a while. It's a top that you haven't looked at maybe 4 or 5 years or more or less. The next minute you go, actually, you know what? I really like this. And we move it back up to the queue. So a few little steps, like, you know, looking at the lifestyle wheel, prioritizing the clothes, what can stay within that wheel is a brilliant place to start. And then, you know, smaller things are, a lot of people keep their weight, kind of weight loss, weight gain clothes right in front of them every day. And I'm not saying that if you remove your, I hate to use the word skinny clothes, but that's what my clients call them. I'm not saying you say to yourself, I'm never going to fit into those, but why would you put them looking at you every day in your wardrobe?
Mm.
So what actually happens is, it's a bit like saying to yourself on Monday, I'm going to be healthy, in your fridge, I don't know, you've put the fridge full of chocolate cake or something. So I don't need to look at that every day. So your wardrobe should be full of friends. And if your wardrobe is not full of friends, what happens is that's where we go shopping, and we go shopping like crazy, and we buy things that we don't need or may not suit us. So you need to open up and get, I always say, put those clothes into another room. Don't have them just looking at you every day. So you've cleansed the wardrobe, stuff that gets a bit wrecked, actually, is very easy to, you know, to pass on. And then I start creating outfits. And what I do is I look at my clothes differently. A top that might feel a bit old fashioned, I might put it with something a bit more modern. But then I start to go, here's my shopping list now. Okay, here's what I need to do.
So
that's what we get to.
You've really tackled the wardrobe before going near any in real life or online shop. I think, though, you hit an important point, because, like, my weight has fluctuated massively over my lifetime because of health issues, you know, and that has been a great source, and I've no problem talking about it, a great source of pain for me. And I think that, like, you know, and I have had the wardrobe, or maybe like the cupboard, where when I lose the weight, or when I, you know, when I figure myself out, they'll go back on me again. There's this emotional connection with our wardrobes. It might be, well, that's the top I wore when he asked me out the first time, or when I got the first job, whatever it might be, that it makes it harder sometimes to let go. They're like these little symbols of the lows and highs of our lives, really, our clothes, aren't they?
They are. What I say about those things, you know, I had a lady recently, she's my age, and she had her Deb's dress in the wardrobe. And there's no problem with keeping your Deb's dress. Mine is well gone. But it's just that, does it need to be there every day? You know, it does. It's like keeping butter from 2006, you know, in the fridge. Does it need to be in front of you every day? Can you put it into another room? So that, what do we do with our photographs sometimes? We either hang them on the wall, or we, sadly, a lot of them end up on our phone. But, you know, I always say I have a little memory box upstairs. And I keep special things that are there. They're not gone to charity, but I know they're up there. If I need to go look at them, I will. So that thing of fluctuation in weight, people have it, especially over COVID, Ashley, and people's weight went absolutely crazy. And then what happens is that people go online and just make themselves feel better. They just kind of go, oh, let's just buy a pair of leggings, I know they'll fit. Let's just buy a big baggy jumper, I know they'll fit. And you're actually better off dressing for the shape you are now, because my mother had this wonderful phrase years ago, there's a lid for every pot. There is something out there for everybody.
Yeah.
It's just a case of what happens with this overconsumption of clothes is that we are trying to do all our shopping from a computer.
Yeah.
That's what happens. And I don't know about you. I made my own mistake during the week where I bought something about a month ago. Life happened. And then it was the 29th day and I didn't get it back. And I said to my husband, oh, I love it. I just never got it back. But it was just where it was only an average thing. It didn't make me feel great. So I think if you, that back to your, I suppose, your original question is, how do you buy quality without breaking the bank? I would be a quality buyer on the basis of cost per wear and joy per wear. So what I would say to you in that situation is, without having to go about design or clothes, but if you go back to your lifestyle, people say to me, oh God, if you go and spend 200 euro on a pair of jeans, that's a lot of money. I'd say, well, what did you spend on a communion outfit for Tom's communion? Well, I spent 400 euro on the dress. How many times do you wear it once?
Yeah.
So you know what? You'll feel very respectable very quickly in a nice top and jeans. And we have to get over this thing of, I think it's an Irish thing, where we just buy for the occasion and the rest of the year we've no money to buy other clothes. My sister's a great phrase. She always coins it, good casuals. And I said, once you talk about good casual, because we were rare, you know, you only wore your good clothes to Mass on Sunday and that was it. But actually what it is when you want to go for a nice cup of coffee, that's not Costa coffee, actually. Let's say it's somewhere nicer than Costa.
No offense to Costa, if Costa's
no
listening.
offense to Costa. Costa's great. But we're going maybe somewhere just, I don't know, a tad nicer. Do I have a nice pair of jeans, even my good trainers or whatever it is that I feel, I don't want to use the word respectable, it's really my mother's thing to use, but we feel confident and nicely dressed and we feel good about ourselves. So what I always say when I'm buying something, it's a bit more than I'd planned. I look at the joy and cost per wear, and I have dressed over 100 women and I might bring them in something into a dressing room and they'll say, now Aoife, you know, I'm not spending that on. I mean, that's fine. Just do you want to try that on? They'll come out and they'll go, is it in another color? Because they can't believe, oh my God, this is just fits me so well. I didn't think I'd ever get clothes to fit me. And it, yes, it might be a good item because it might have great stretch. And trust me, you can also get good items in other stores as well. But it's back to that lifestyle, because I always say you spend your money where you spend your time. And don't get me wrong.
Okay.
A lovely dress for a wedding, but you can rent that if you want. You can borrow that if you want to. For me, if I was going to a wedding tomorrow, I'd either have something in my wardrobe, I'd rent it, or I'd wait for the sales. That's what I do. Or
and like rental, you can get, and I have done this, like you can rent dresses that you would never have the money to buy for maybe €80, have it for the day of the wedding and the night after or whatever. Like just, you, it's not like you have to, I think sometimes people think, oh, well, like, I'm not going to get back to that shop tomorrow. You have a couple of days of leeway, you know,
4 days.
Yeah, exactly. Most of them allow you the 4 days, and the interest you have, it's an access to an alternative wardrobe and feel really special for an occasion. But if we come back to that, the everyday wear, because I think that's a really good point here in Ireland, we do buy for occasions. We don't have an issue with dressing ourselves for an occasion because it's a special day. So it's almost like we give ourselves permission to buy for an event. So should we nearly, like, I know there'll be lots of people listening to this who have a uniform for work, whether they're in the medical professional or maybe a sports team or whatever it might be. But for those of us that don't have an official uniform for work or day to day, should we nearly think of it as a uniform in that, like, not that this is what I wear Monday, this is what I wear Tuesday, but this is my wardrobe for work. This is my wardrobe for fun. This is my wardrobe for exercise. Do we need to kind of divide it up in that way in our heads?
Absolutely. And that's how I do it. You know, I am. And it depends on your style, personality. For example, some people, let's say, are more dressed people. They just love a dress. No matter what they're doing, they might take a dress, put it on with a pair of Doc Martens. And that's their idea of casual, or a pair of trainers. Other people love trousers. So if I take someone like myself, I'm always cold. I love jeans. I think I'm back to my 501 days. So I have, if I think of my wardrobe every day, I know, okay, good pair of jeans, depending on what I'm doing. If I'm in a company, it's different. Good pair of jeans, a nice knit because I'm always cold. And I go back to what my mother would say, a good coat will take you everywhere. And a good coat is what takes me everywhere between October and March, sadly April.
So it's about, you know, if you're going to go into a shop and you are going to go, and or even online, but if you're going to buy, you have to really think it through. Like, how many wears am I going to get out of this? Like, we can't do this thing of buying for the wardrobe. And, you know, really, in a lot of instances, we're buying to then store as opposed to buying to wear, which, if you think about it logically, doesn't make much sense. Yeah. Now, Aoife, I want to talk to you because I know you love colour and I love colour. I want to talk to you about colour. I want to talk to you about something you said on Instagram there during the week as well that really piqued my interest for completely selfish reasons. But we're going to ask Aoife Dunican to bear with us a few moments while we take some ads and pay the bills. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103, and we'll be back after these.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103, and we're talking all things style and how to be more practical and conscious in our wardrobes so that we're being kind to the environment. And we're joined by Aoife Dunican, also known as the Style Bob. And I didn't say earlier, but if you're not following Aoife on Instagram, like you're not on Instagram, you need to follow her. So it's the Style Bob is on Instagram and you need to follow her and all her travels and tips and tricks, because she's very generous with the advice on Instagram. Now, I said before the break that I wanted to talk to you, Aoife, about colour. And you had a very interesting post in the last couple of days around the gym. And if you're single and looking to meet somebody and in the hopes maybe in the gym, you might wear a bit of colour to the gym. And genuinely, it kind of got me thinking, because I am single. But when I go to, I kind of have hierarchy of my clothing, and I'll be totally honest, when I go to the gym, and I do go a couple of times a week, it tends to be the top that I don't really want to get rid of, but probably isn't good enough for work anymore. So I, yeah. I feel I need to up my gym game. But you were talking there about colour and the approachability of colour and how important that is. And like when people say to me, oh, Aisling, you wear loads of colour in your clothes, I do it because I'm really, really pale. And if I catch myself in a wardrobe in what I think of as drab colours on me, I feel like I look tired. Whereas I get confidence from wearing colour. But I hadn't thought about colour in the approachability factor. Explain that one to me.
So, as you know, you and I both love colour. And colour is really interesting because it affects us emotionally, physically, psychologically. And just to break it down, brighter colours excite and energise us. So red, orange, yellow, pink, all brighter colours. The calming colours are green and blue. Blue is the colour of trust, green is the colour of balance. They actually have a short wavelength of light. So they're really gentle on our nervous system. So think about it. You go up to Charleville Woods tomorrow or go over to Loch Ennell or something, over to the sea. You immediately will feel calm. Looking at those colours, you've had a really bad day. So those colours are really, when I get off a webinar, for example, I wear red for the 45 minutes, up energy, you know, confident Aoife, and then I'm exhausted. So I go straight back to blue and green. When it comes to approachability, I've done a lot of work with this because colour, how we consume colour is extremely subconscious. So if you ever walked into a room, I had to do this a few weeks ago and it was mortifying, where I knew absolutely nobody in the room, like nobody. And I had to make a half a second decision rather than being, you know, standing there. And by the way, I was all dressed in bright red. So I'm the one standing out. But I made a half second decision where I saw a girl in a blue dress and I walked over to her. I've never done this in my life. And I said, hi, I actually don't know anybody. Can I talk to you? We ended up having a great chat. But I told her that night what happened. And she said, well, you came over and you were like this big ball of energy. And, you know, I could not but talk to you. So the thing is that I wouldn't have gone towards somebody all dressed in black, because black actually means lack of colour. It doesn't have energy. And I love black, don't get me wrong, and I wear it. But it's not the colour of energy. It's the colour of luxury. It's the colour of power and authority. So that's great for brands like Chanel. And if years ago, your boss might be head to toe black. But now when I'm working with kind of female execs, if they're head to toe black and they have a very strong personality, we try and soften it with colour, right? So getting back to our gym situation, if you think about it, back to that room, you walk into the room, you're not going to go towards the person in black. Right. By the way, not that you're standing there. Hi, I'm Aisling. I'm not going to go towards you wearing black. I'm not going to say that.
But subconsciously.
Subconsciously, you're going, who looks friendly? And I did it that day.
It is about, you know, like the impact that we have on others and what we're looking for out of life. And if we are looking to be more approachable, then thinking about the colours that we're choosing to wear. And I'll be heading to Portlaoise Tradfest on Saturday night now. So I'm going to have to wear something nice and bright and colourful and not black, which might be my go-to on a night out, I have to admit. But Aoife, oftentimes we'll try something on the shop and we might really, really love it. And there's that hesitancy maybe about picking it up because, well, I need to have it tailored. I need to have something taken up or a bit taken in or just adjusted ever so slightly. How important in your mind is tailoring if we're going to keep our wardrobes for longer? Like I have a coat that I love. It was given to me in 2009 when I graduated from college by my mum. At the time, I think it cost something like €350, which was a lot of money, you know, a lot of money in 2009.
Yeah.
Winter 2024, I guarantee you I will still be wearing that coat because I love it so much. It has been to the alterations lady in Tullamore on numerous occasions to just get it tidied up and fixed up. Like, how important is it that we maybe, when we're budgeting for clothing, factor in that if we really want to be environmentally friendly and sustainable and do this the right way, that we might need to get something tailored, but if we want to keep it long term, it's going to need to be taken care of.
So first of all, Ashley, it's 100% important, but what I refuse to do is there's no point in buying a €20 top in Zara and taking €25 to get it tailored.
Yes.
You know, but then that just gets economically
ridiculous. Yeah,
ridiculous. I always say, maybe you've seen this on my Instagram, whether your clothes are from Dunn's or Dior, they have to fit you. And when they fit you, they look a lot more expensive and they look better on. So I have to allow, we talked about, even though I'm 5'7", I have to always allow 15, €20 to get my trousers shortened all the time. But if I feel that they're something I'm going to wear when they're shortened, and that they might be pre-loved or secondhand, or sorry, got them in a sale and they're good quality, I don't mind paying that. I am really, really careful, and just on that point of tailoring, of minding your clothes, because I see too often people washing their dark clothes. Now, gym gear is different, okay? But we should not be washing, if we're just kind of lightly wearing our clothes, we should be washing them in 30 degrees. I wash all my good jeans in black woolite in 30 degrees. All my darks get washed in 30 degrees because too many people are firing them in these very hot washes, washing the clothes very often, which is too much. But when it comes to also the altering of the clothes, I sometimes, because I'm more petite on the top than I am on the bottom, I'm always taking clothes. Or if I see something on sale and I feel it's a fantastic quality and all it needs is to be nipped in, maybe under the chest, I go, you know what? If that's what going to, if I'm going to pay €30, if it's a difference between me buying it, wearing it versus buying it and not wearing it, then it's the most sustainable thing to do. Same with shoes. People buy these pointy shoes. The first thing you do with a pair of pointy shoes is wear them once, but get the tips put on, little triangle put in the top of your shoes, because that'll make sure that you don't damage the shoes. So I wear them once and then I take them straight to Isaac Jackman's in the barge and he'll put the little tip on and they last much longer. So I'm always consciously repairing, minding, hang your clothes up properly. We all pick up those awful wire hangers from the dry cleaners. But the only reason I go on to Amazon or go into the storage shop and I buy the felt hangers is that I want my clothes to kind of look nice. You know, if they're all fired over a chair, you know, or squashed on, they don't look nice. That's, you kind of want to make things look better. I was with a lady recently and she was just about to take she's very good with her own hands. She's about to take a big chunk off the bottom of her jacket. She was about 5 foot and she felt the jacket was too long. It wasn't the jacket. Down to her knuckles.
The sleeve. Yeah.
So all we did was we took it back to the wrist bone and she could not believe how all of a sudden the whole thing looked neater. So she never had to touch the bottom.
And if you want to be taken seriously in life and work, having well-fitting clothes is vitally important. Aoife Dunican, I could speak to you all evening, but you've been so generous with your time. Aoife does give talks on sustainability around clothing for workplaces and in variety of venues. So please do look her up on The Style Bob on Instagram. Aoife Dunican, thank you very much for joining us on Let's Go Green.
Thank you, Ashley.
We'll be back after these.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for on this week's episode of the show. My sincere thanks to both Rebecca Duran-Stewart of UX and Y and Aoife Dunican of the Style Bob fame. It was an absolute pleasure to have both ladies on the show this week. And please do look them up if you'd like to find out more about sustainability in terms of your online presence, but also in terms of your wardrobe. A big thank you to everyone for your messages about the show each and every week. Each one of them does get read. I'm not always the best about replying to them, I have to admit, but I do try and read all my emails. So if you'd like to get in contact with me and perhaps suggest an item for the show, maybe there's something that you're involved in your community, or maybe there's a question that you have and you don't know where to find the answer, but you think that I might be able to do it for you, please do hop over to midlands103.com. Click on the button across the top of the screen there. It says the on-air team. Look for my name, Aisling O'Rourke, and that will give you an option to send me an email. If you want to email me directly, it's hello@thecommunicationscoach.ie, and I will do my level best to get that item on the show and to help in any way that I can. I want to give a shout out. The National Student Enterprise Awards are coming up, and we do have some very strong contenders from the Midland Counties. So they will be competing, I believe it's on the 9th of May. So very best of luck to all of you for your inventions, your creativity and your small businesses. It's great to see awards like these taking place. And an awful lot of these young entrepreneurs are looking at more sustainable options. So I do hope in the coming weeks to feature those finalists here on Let's Go Green. Of course, this programme goes out on Midlands 103 FM, midlands103.com and Spotify and Apple Podcasts. So if you've missed a part of this episode or any other episode of the show, all episodes are available as a podcast. So please do go out and have a listen to them. If you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please do give us a 5-star rating. If you're feeling generous, even write us a review. That is all we have time for on this week's episode of the show. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, because I almost forgot, next Monday is a bank holiday and the schedule here on Midlands 103 is slightly different. So enjoy the long weekend, and I'll be chatting you in a fortnight's time. Stay safe and have a great week.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.